I think we should be outing good teachers, because there are lots of good teachers just hidden away doing their thing and we don't hear about it. And that's really sad. We should be hearing what these teachers are doing. And sometimes they don't want to share, which is cool, but I think if we have a platform where people can share and show what they're doing, then it should be, people should be hearing that.
Listening to the NZPE Teacher Cast, a podcast sharing some of the inspirational stories from amazing teachers and educators within New Zealand and around the world. Today's episode is sponsored by My Study Series, an online learning platform supporting Kiwi teachers and students through NCEA. With the ability to track student progress and quiz results, data provided by My Study Series ensures teachers remain informed of how well their students are performing. Check it out now at mystudyseries.co.nz.
Kia ora koutou and welcome to NZPE TeacherCast. As you'll be able to tell, we're doing things a little bit differently today. Ko Celia Fleck tōku ingoa, and today it is my privilege to be sitting in the interviewer seat that is normally occupied by the one and only Carl Conliffe, and to be asking him the questions. Carl really doesn't need any introduction, and so in keeping with the recent PENS NZHEA EONS conference theme of past, present and future, I thought we could go on a bit of a journey today. So, Carl, tell us about yourself growing up. What did you love to do? Who or what were the big influences in terms of how you spent your time?
Sport was really big for me growing up, and I had three sports. I played league when I was really little. My dad asked my mum to take me along to the rugby club, and so mum took me to the league club for some reason, not knowing the difference, and I ended up playing league, which was interesting, but dad wanted me to play rugby. And that was, league was really physical, so that was my first kind of really foray into sport. And I also did a lot of athletics, and I moved on to basketball through high school. So my parents, they influenced me a lot. They were really supportive, but they didn't really engage in my sport too much. I think when I was at high school, my mum came to watch me compete at the track, and she wondered how my spikes worked on the orange concrete. So that she had no idea that it was a rubber track. So that kind of, they didn't come along to a lot. They came to some of my basketball, but they were really supportive. They just didn't engage much. And they limited me to a summer and a winter sport, which was probably good for me. I had my winter sport, which ended up being basketball, and my summer sport, which was track and field, and I competed in high jump. And that meant that I could put a lot of effort and a lot of time into those, and I got quite good at both of them. I had a couple of national titles in high jump, which was really big achievements for me, and got to become a 2 metre jumper. But I think early on was their support, and they were always encouraging me to get better, and I was never really, really good at these sports. But one thing I noticed, and we've been doing a bit of work within the school around growth mindset, and when Zico, one of the teachers in my department, he hosted a session on it, and I've since read Carolyn Dweck's book on growth mindset, I realised that when I was in high school, when I started getting good, a lot of people would question how I did it, and I said, I trained a lot. And their response to that was an interesting one, where they were like, oh, that doesn't count because it's not natural. And I remember thinking to myself going, what are you on?
Yeah.
You know, I've worked really hard to achieve this stuff. And, you know, I've had this, my parents pushing me, and I've gotten quite good at what I do. How is that not better than having natural talent?
Yeah.
And then, so that all came, you know, I understood once Zico started talking about that, and we did these workshops that, so I had a growth mindset really early on, and I was prepared to work hard to try to improve. And that was all just part of wanting to better myself, and having the support of my parents, who weren't, like I said, necessarily engaged, but would provide enough for me that I could do what I wanted to do in terms of sport. Yeah.
So you mentioned basketball and league, but then also only been able to choose or play one per season. So at some point, did you have to choose between those two?
Yeah, league. I started with league, and then I picked up track and field to train for league, and then I got good at track and field. So then I specialised in high jump, and then basketball was to train for high jump, and I dropped the league. So that's kind of how basketball replaced league. Yeah.
All right, so I know something about you that you haven't mentioned, and so good segue. How from league, track and field, basketball, did a Kiwi kid end up in a bobsled team?
Yeah, it was a cool story. I've told this to people and they don't believe me, but so being a high jumper, I had a good power base, and I'd spent so long being a slim athlete. I think when I was jumping, I weighed 79 kilos, and I'd focused a lot on keeping my weight down because it's worth so many centimetres over the bar. And then when I finished that, about 2004, 2003, I finished competing, I thought I'd go the opposite way. And I just tried to put on a lot of mass, a lot of muscle, and I ended up getting into bodybuilding, and I've competed in that as well. And then one day, my sister-in-law rang me up, and she said, there's this talent ID advert in the newspaper. You know, they're looking for big, powerful athletes. So I thought, oh, yeah, I'll give it a go. Nothing to lose, it's something new. I've always wanted to be an Olympian. That was my desire and my dream when I was young. So I went along, and we had to do these jump tests and a speed test, I think it was, three jumps and then maybe a 20-metre sprint. Thought nothing of it, and got a call a few weeks later to say I actually finished quite high up in the standings because they had a multiplier for your weight. So I had all of that base power and then a multiplier for my weight. I think I weighed about 108 kilos. At the time, which was pretty heavy. Mm. And bobsleigh, so you have a 200 kilo sled, and in a four man, I think the limit is 600 kilos. So you want at the top of the hill, you need that weight, you need all 600 kilos. So if you don't have it at the top of the hill, you put it in the sled with lead weight, because that's weight is really valuable at the bottom.
Yeah.
So if you don't hit that 400 kilos between four people, you're pushing a heavier sled off the blocks, which doesn't help. So you get that multiplier in the talent ID because I was a bigger athlete, so I was worth more to the team. So that's really what kickstarted it. And we did really good. I got to compete in Switzerland, which was a choice experience. We were treated like professional athletes, which was cool, but we didn't quite make it. We had a few crashes, and investors got scared and dropped funding. So just before Vancouver, the team was pulled out, which was a shame because it would have been a cool experience.
Absolutely. Mm. And so when you were younger and you dreamt of being an Olympic athlete, did you ever have a particular sport in mind?
It was track and field.
Yeah.
But I got to uni and I did an exercise science degree, and you learned very early that unless you were doping, the likelihood of making it was pretty slim.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
It is. So what led you to teaching?
I tried the fitness industry and didn't like it. I felt that people weren't really prepared to invest money in their own body to better themselves and keep themselves healthy. You know, they're more than willing to invest lots of money in their car, but not their body, which didn't really make sense to me. And I had done a bit of coaching at the time, and it just seemed like a natural transition. Wasn't something I was overly passionate about, but I didn't have anything else. So I made the jump. I actually did it online. I did all my study online. I lived in the hut. Vic Uni was in town. I was just too lazy to drive in each morning. So we did all this online learning. And then I think we had a weekend up at Vic Uni, and that was it for 1 year.
Still practicums?
Yep, still had your practicums.
Yeah.
But you'd have this online work, and you just spend all Monday doing it. I'd go from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. completing the week's work, and then I had the whole week off. It was lots of fun. But I don't remember any of that stuff. What you learn is being in front of the kids.
Yeah.
That's where you get all your learning and your experience and make all your mistakes and learn from that.
Absolutely. So those of us who have been to your workshops on gamification have seen the photos of how you've been a gamer. You've been all over the world almost with your gaming. Tell us about your experience as a gamer and how it has influenced some of your teaching practices.
I had a few classic game consoles when I was really little. I had a Sega SC-3000 and an Atari machine, and all my friends had them as well, and that's what we did when we were really little. When we weren't playing sport, we played video games. And then I got to a period maybe intermediate, start of high school, where it just, there wasn't much gaming happening because games were starting to get expensive. So it wasn't until I really had some disposable income that I started getting back into it, and sort of towards the end of high school and start of uni that I started seeing these opportunities come up, and it's when online gaming on consoles sort of was introduced, and I'm a bit of an early adopter, so I jumped on board that. So, you know, I was just kind of the situation, that those environmental influences where it was new and not many people were jumping on board online gaming, so I was one of the few people doing that, and I had a lot of spare time because I was studying, and all that kind of contributed to being in a position where they were looking for people to compete, and the competitions were pretty weak, to be honest, and there weren't many people interested, so I was just kind of lucky and went to a few competitions. I went to one in Auckland that I won, and that gained me entry to a final in Queenstown during Winter Festival, which was really cool. And those core group of gamers at that point, I think it was about 2001, kind of hung together quite a bit, and we entered a lot of the other competitions. And then FIFA introduced something called the FIFA Interactive World Cup, where they held a world championship, and all you had to do was be the top qualifier in your country online. So I would game for 7-8 hours at a time. I'd get home from teaching and by 4, and I'd be on the game until 2 a.m. rinse and repeat. So I got to go to Germany, London, Australia a couple of times. Got to take my mum to Australia. It was always all expenses paid.
Yeah.
So my partner, who's now my wife, she got to come to London and Germany, which was pretty cool. And they put you up in 5-star hotels, and you get a stipend, and it was pretty cool. It was, you know, every 12-year-old's dream.
Yeah.
And I actually won a trip to Amsterdam as well, but I had a choice between the bobsledding or a trip to Amsterdam. And so I chose the bobsledding, which naturally, being a phys edder, you would. But I remember at the time, all the gaming community were like, what an idiot. What's he? Why wants to go to the Olympics?
Yeah, yeah.
He's got a trip to Amsterdam. And I'm like, what? Why you didn't even have to think about that choice.
Because presumably the gaming had monetary rewards.
Yes, 20k first prize, yeah, was the reward.
Yeah.
So that's why people, I guess, were passionate about that. And so that kind of really shaped my attitude towards technology, and I could see how games and technology engaged me, and if we could harness that well in education, then there's no reason why we can't have the same benefit in education. So very early on, you know, with the support of my principal, we started implementing simple games, video games within PE, looking at reaction time and things like that. But then the technology on top of that was really interesting as well. iPhones had come out, and you could see the power in different apps. So I was just always looking for new ways to innovate with my students, with the hope that they would be better engaged in the classroom. And I think they were. And it was just, that was my passion. So I tried to do it as much as possible. Not so much anymore. I haven't gamed for a long time. Social games, iPad. That's where it's at now.
Another aspect of your teaching practice that you present on is flipped learning. So what are the positive outcomes for teachers and learners that you see as a result of using this?
The big thing for me with flipped learning is the relationships. People get strung up in the content creation. And while that's an important component of it, the benefits of the flipped classroom really come in your extra face-to-face class time that you have with your students. So you're no longer standing up the front chalking and talking. The students have had the content. You've removed direction instruction from within the classroom. And the students have digested that outside the classroom. So when you come together, you have more face-to-face class time. And not only the student-teacher relationships, which are a byproduct of me not having a chalk and talk, excuse me, you know, I'm walking around facilitating and engaging with the students much more than if I'd been in a traditional classroom, but also the student-student relationship. So our lessons have a lot more collaboration and interaction through group work with one another, and our practical tasks are in more authentic context because we have more time to plan better learning experiences for the students. So that kind of that's the thing for me. It's the relationships with the students, because that's our core business. If you have a good relationship with a kid, you can pretty much achieve anything with them in the classroom.
Yeah, nice. One of my wonderings about flipped learning recently, and I don't have a huge understanding of it, but has been around the potential time pressures that it puts on students outside of school hours. Is that an issue?
No, I don't think it is. But first of all, because I don't think flipping is that ingrained yet. You know, I doubt there would be a kid who has their all five or six subjects with teachers flipping their content. And then again, not every single topic is suitable to be flipped. So it's going to be periods where they might have a lot of videos to watch, and other periods they won't have any. And there's ideal time frames for the videos too. I tend to keep mine within 5 to 8 minutes tops if I can. Maybe a few stretch out to 10 minutes. But that's, so if they've got some homework for me and it's a flip video, tops 15 minutes work. They watch a video, they complete a little bit of quiz at the end, and maybe write some questions, but that's it. And, you know, across 4 or 5 subjects, I don't think that's too onerous. I don't think it's ever going to get onerous. The hard part is the teacher having to build the content. That's the time-consuming part, because you've got to plan. If you're making a video, you've got to plan the video, you've got to film it, you've got to edit it. Then you spend all that time creating a much more authentic learning experience in the classroom after the video. So the teachers are the ones that are bearing the brunt of the impact, yeah. I think.
But as you said, winning out in terms of that relationships. Yeah. So in terms of the NZPE teacher cast, what do you love about doing those interviews, and what have been some of the highlights?
I think it's really important that we always trying to network, and I think we're going to talk about that soon. I think we should be outing good teachers, because there are lots of good teachers just hidden away doing their thing and we don't hear about it, and that's really sad. We should be hearing what these teachers are doing, and sometimes they don't want to share, which is cool, but I think if we have a platform where people can share and show what they're doing, then it should be, people should be hearing that, which is cool. So that's another thing that I like. And I like, you know, learning is a big thing for me, and other teachers have so much to offer, and if I can learn something from them, then it makes the whole experience worthwhile. Some of the highlights, some good ones. I think the one on Sport Ed, with Andrew O'Neill from Middleton Grange. I think that was our most popular, and that was, we were sitting in a pub drinking beer doing that one, which was really cool. Nice relaxed atmosphere, and Andrew has a lot of really cool ideas around engaging his students within that Sport Ed model, and we had a lot of interest from all around the world around finding the resources that he was using with his approach. So that was a big highlight. I think also another highlight was me realising that people don't really want to hear from me, they want to hear from other people. And you know, I don't know what I'm doing in terms of this whole podcast stuff. It was just on a bit of a whim, and people, who was the first person I interviewed? Was it Matt? I can't remember. But I interviewed someone, and then all of a sudden people were asking questions, and I thought, that's it, you know.
Yeah.
I had planned to maybe do once a fortnight was me talking and rambling, and then once a fortnight was I'd interview somebody else. So I decided then it had to be all interviewing other people. That's the value I could give to the community. And then, and I guess now, moving away from just PE teachers to looking at all learning areas, because an English teacher can learn from a phys ed and vice versa, and we've all got something to offer, you know.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that aspect and moving forward in that regard. I think it's exciting. Like you said, we've got so much to learn from each other. But yeah, I guess, you know, I want to thank you, and perhaps on behalf of a lot of people, thank you for the stories that you've told or that you've allowed people to tell in terms of on this NZPE teacher cast and so much that we've learned from listening to those stories?
Give me feedback, because like I said, I don't really know what I'm doing. I just come up with 10 questions and pose them to the guests. So
any advice will be awesome. I'd say it's all working so far. So then another of your big projects has been my study series. What led you to putting this together?
Yeah, this has been a bit of a... I've spent a lot of time, probably close to 1,200 hours on this in the last 12 months, which has been one hell of an experience. And I've been a big advocate for flipped learning. You know, I've travelled around the world to speak on it. And I see the benefit firsthand all the time from it. But the common response from teachers that I advocate this approach was, well, I don't have time to make the content. And I'd hear it over and over again. And despite all the benefits that you'd explain and the pictures that I could paint for them, they still came back to that content being the sticky point. So I just thought, hell, I'll just make the content for them and see what happens. And I thought I would make these videos and, you know, go through that. You're putting yourself out there. I teach things a certain way. Other people might not like it, whatever. I'm exposing myself. I'm asking for money for this stuff, and that's kind of scary. But teachers started picking it up, and it got more popular. And I think now we've got about, I think we hit 400 classes this week on it from over 70 schools, about 6,000 students, which is, for me, it's kind of empowering. You know, here at school, I can influence maybe 80 to 100 students a week, but I can have this, I can have impact within our learning area across the whole country, and that's kind of cool. But it has been a challenge. You know, it's tough. You know, I'm selling a commercial product to my peers, and I don't like that aspect of it. But we'll see. We've got some cool things in the works, or some big announcements coming soon, which will be. So it's growing and it's getting popular. But it's been a lot of hard work, and I spend a lot of time dealing with some of the issues that running a business has. But good learning experience.
Yeah. Lots of what you do is about helping to connect physical educators, and I know that you believe really strongly in this, and that also you think in New Zealand we could be doing this a heck of a lot better. So what would be some key enablers to achieving this?
I think teachers need to be more willing to seek support and knowledge from outside their, whatever their tribe might look like, you know, your department or your school. I think we need to be prepared to step out of our comfort zone and be prepared to fail and seek help from others and learn from those failures and then come back from that and kind of kick ass for all the stuff that you've learned. I think we could be recognising more great teachers. We definitely don't reward good teaching enough, and even, you know, a PENS conference, there are a few awards that are given out, but a lot of those tend to be for a lot of people in the past. We honour people that have done really well in the past, but I don't think there's enough acknowledgement and recognition for people in the present that are doing well, and our young teachers are doing well, and we need to be able to show them that we appreciate what they do and keep them motivated, because it's a tough industry and we're losing teachers. And I think if we could reward or acknowledge the good teaching more, then we might keep more people in the profession. And, you know, I presented in Tasmania a couple of years ago, and it was a state conference, so it was like the Wellington PENS conference, if there was such a thing. And it was 2 days, and we went to the dinner. Now, they gave away, must have given away $60,000 worth of gear. They were acknowledging teachers left, right and centre, throwing them iPads, big screen TVs, all of these resources, and they thought nothing of it because they were investing in their teachers. And I'm not saying that's what we need to do, but they obviously understood that if you recognise and acknowledge the good teaching, then maybe we would attract more good teachers and maybe we'd get teachers in the profession for longer. So I think, yeah, it all comes back to being prepared to fail and step out of your comfort zone, but then also acknowledging the good things that happen in education. I don't know, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because you alluded to it earlier in the podcast around that people being prepared to put themselves forward and tell their stories. And I think, you know, New Zealand, we do have this tall poppy culture,
for sure,
don't we? And so even those awards like At Pens that do acknowledge the present, I know that very few nominations are put forward for those. And that's a bit of a shame, I think, for whatever reason people aren't putting themselves forward or putting others forward. So, it would be nice to see a better culture developed around acknowledging the great stuff that people are doing. So,
I've got a few ideas, and I'm going to approach Richard shortly about an idea, and I think I've mentioned something to you about how in PE we can maybe do some more acknowledgement of people that are engaged in a good practice. So I'll tell you more about that later. Watch the space.
You've had opportunity to connect with PE teachers internationally and soon are heading to the Connected PE conference in Dubai. What can New Zealand physical educators learn from their international colleagues, and what can they learn from us?
I don't know what other teachers, what other New Zealand physical educators could learn, really, because I think it's it all comes back to what you desire to be learning. So for me, going over there and engaging with all of these teachers from around the world and networking and what I do, for me it's all about culture, and I'm really interested about what drives other teachers, what makes them want to be successful, why they teach, what their values are, you know, what their ambitions for their students are and how that is visible in their approach to teaching, what their whole order comprises of, what makes them them, you know, that's kind of what I'm interested in. I think as maybe New Zealand physical educators, it's like what I mentioned before about being able to learn from English teachers and being able to learn from science teachers to help our practice. We can learn in the same essence from what a teacher in America, how they approach PE, despite being completely different to what we do here. We can learn from Australian educators around some of the Indigenous issues that they face in Australia and you know, blend what we do and look at how that impacts us. So really just being accepting of other cultures and wanting to learn and see how that shapes their teaching and how we can take bits and pieces from their curriculums and their approaches and maybe implement them in New Zealand. Like a global approach to PE. I don't know, that was a tough question. That was all I could come up for that one.
It's interesting, like, listening to how often you talk about learning, and that obviously is just something for you that's just part of you and part of your values, is that ongoing learning. Because earlier when you were talking about I forget when it was actually, but it made me think about again that creating that culture of that willingness to keep learning and that growth mindset, so that teachers, departments, schools don't think of professional development as something that is only for people who have things that need to be fixed.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's not thinking about I'm not doing things, it's not that I'm doing things wrong, it's that I can always be looking at ways of improvement and ways I can be doing things better.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do we create that culture everywhere? And I'm not sure what the answer
is.
No,
so for some people that's not a value, and those people are happy to go home from work and sit on the couch and watch TV, and that's cool, that's their thing. My thing is I go home and I try to learn something new, and that's, I haven't always been like that, and even at the start of my teaching career I wasn't like that, but when you start seeing again good teaching practice and you see these teachers doing these cool things, you're like, oh, how do they do that? And if I could use that in my class, I can have a positive impact on my students. So you'll learn a little bit about that.
What do you think are going to be the big game changers for physical educators over the next 10 years? And alongside that, do you think that there are any non-negotiables for physical educators that they must always hold on to for the sake of their learners and physical education itself.
Now, I think we've got a pretty scary future for PE anyway. I think the technology is just going to get massive in society. There's going to be more screen time. We're going to have a more sedentary population, and that's going to cost us. It's definitely going to cost us. But in saying that, I'm very pro-screen. I've got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and I put very few restrictions on their screen time because I think in 10, 20 years' time, everything they do is going to be done on a screen, and people might disagree with that, but I've seen how the screens for them have had a positive impact on their learning, which has been... I never thought I'd have this attitude towards it, but I do. But it's all in balance, moderation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't let my kids sit there for the whole day watching YouTube, which I'm sure if I let them, they would. But, you know, we've got them out in the backyard and we take them down the beach, you know. So it's finding a balance. But it is going to be interesting seeing what the future holds. I think we're going to be really data-driven. I think technology... the advancements in technology, we're going to see more uptake of wearables and how the data from those wearables is going to drive some of the information and data around PE. Life tracking, have you heard of life tracking?
No.
So life tracking is you can track everything. People track every single aspect of their life, you know, how long they sleep, what they eat, you know, those are the staples. But then how much urine they pass, the books they read, when they've read them, like in anything you think of, their weight, whatever. You know, I'm only touching the surface, but what that allows people to do is to see and determine what their behaviours have, how they've influenced other aspects of their life, which I think is really interesting. And I'd love, I made a note, I'd love for someone in scholarship student, to do some life tracking for 12 months and base their whole scholarship project on maybe how certain behaviours that we might not have considered has shaped their how that's influenced their physical activity levels or something like that.
Yeah.
Like I can open up an app now on my phone that will tell me the things I did the day before where I had my best sleep. So if I have a pattern of that over time, I can go back and say, oh, I went for a run that day and I slept really well, and that's happened 89 days of the year. So that has a definitive positive impact on my sleep patterns, which is going to make me function better the next day. So that's only going to get bigger and bigger. So I think that is, we're going to see a lot of that over the next 10 to 20 years. I think if our non-negotiables have to be those relationships. I had a few people when I launched my study series say, oh, you're trying to automate PE and you're trying to take us away from the classroom and face-to-face classroom time, but it's the complete opposite.
Yeah.
It's allowing us to have more face-to-face time with our students because we can never lose our relationships.
So, and alongside that, the movement, and allowing us to have more movement during that contact time with our... What about like virtual reality, augmented reality? Thoughts on that?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it'll come. I saw a cool app the other day where it was augmented reality, a measuring app, and you held your phone and you push start on the screen where you wanted to begin the measurement, and you drag it out and a virtual ruler would appear. I thought that was really cool. That's clever. I don't know what could that look like. Maybe in 30 years' time, maybe the best teacher in New Zealand is the only teacher in New Zealand, and that person teaches in an augmented state or a virtual state, and you know, 100,000, 200,000 students plug into that each day, and we learn from that one person because they're the best teacher. I don't know. I mean, that's pretty scary.
Yeah, that is.
But, you know, you
see. What happens to relationships then?
Yeah, they cease to exist, and a whole lot of people don't have jobs.
Yeah. So, where to next for you?
I don't know. It's been an interesting 12 months. And my stand or my why in life is based around three core values, and you've already picked up on one of them, but the first is my family, and I've got a lovely wife and I've got two amazing kids, and as they grow and get older, they're becoming more and more a priority for me, as it should be, and I'm sure it is for a lot of teachers. My taha tinana, my physical well-being, is the next most important thing to me. You know, I spend a lot of time training and trying to keep fit because that's something that I value. And I think in the future, you know, as we become more sedentary, which we will, I think being in good shape is going to put you in a position where it's much easier to be successful than somebody who's not in good shape, as sad as that is, because an unfit person has as much to offer as a fit person. But I think the way we're going...
Successful in what regard? How do you use that idea of success?
Could be used in any manner. I mean, like, when I say, like, I think you're going to get more opportunities.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're going to start, you know, looking, we already do, we look down on people who don't fit the norm for society.
Yeah.
But I think that's just going to get exaggerated even more. I don't know, maybe we'll all get fat and lazy from technology, and if you're fit, you'll like miss out on all the opportunities. I don't know. But I think we put all these people, we isolate these people because they don't fit society's norms, and I think that's just going to get worse and worse. So that's not why I want to be fit, obviously, but it's something that, it's my downtime, it's, I unplug, I get away, and that helps me feel refreshed. And the third thing is lifelong learning. You know, my third value, my third stand, why I am me, and it's a massive part of my life. In the last 12 months, I've done more learning than I have in the last 12 years, and that's been hugely beneficial for me. But as you know, all of these things happen, and my family gets more important, and teaching gets harder and harder and more consuming, I wonder if, you know, when I have that stand, I have those three values, and they have to dictate every decision I make in life, because that's my why.
Mm.
So I really don't know. I don't want to get away from teaching, but that's a possibility, because it is hard to teach and have family time. You know, we've got a coach, we've got to mark, we've got admin work to do. You know, I had aspirations to be a senior manager, but you know, I did a couple of weeks acting last year, and there's no way I want to buy into that now. You know, I want to be able to influence education and have an impact. So what that looks like, whether that's me teaching or some other role,
mm.
I don't know. But yeah, it all comes back to those three core values for me, and finding something that allows me to do all three of them.
Yeah.
Mm. I can do that now. Teaching allows me to do that. But I think it's getting harder and harder. And as your kids get older and they demand more of your time and your energy,
yeah,
I don't know how some people do it. I've got a few friends with four kids. How do you do that?
No, I don't know either.
No idea. Yeah, so the future for me, I don't know what it's going to hold, but it's going to be exciting, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for allowing me to ask the questions of you today, for all that you've contributed so far to the health and PE community, to the education community, and yeah, really look forward to seeing where things take you next.
No, thank you, and thanks for coming up with this idea, because yeah, it's nice to have the tables turned a little bit. So thanks for the questions and coming up with them.
You're welcome.